What is happening? Welcome to the Craft Pitching Podcast by PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock, back in a normal place with, you know, I mean, are you sick of him? I'm not sick of him. Dino Saris. Good to see
hopefully,
you.
Hopefully not.
I mean,
hi, everyone.
One or two times that you've been a guest on this show.
Yeah.
How are you, Eno?
I'm doing great.
You just ran 8 miles.
I'm barely standing up.
Well, I'm glad you're sitting down because everybody else should too. As we go over starting pitcher sleepers for 2026, and really the main focus of how we're establishing that is actual sleepers, the ones who have not performed well or underneath how we think they can perform. And we're going to jump around a bit in this podcast, looking at a lot of different pitchers and saying, hey, look, what if they just kind of did this thing? Or if they added this little bit, is there that path to them becoming a major arm in the year ahead? Last year, we did this, and I remember distinctly one of the guys that you selected for this. Do you remember who that pitcher is, Eno?
Are you saying they were terrible or they broke out?
They were great. You nailed it. I will not call out the one that you, come on.
Who was it?
It was Landon Roop.
Oh, that's right. That's right. In fact, I was thinking about Landon Roop before this because I have another giant. And the reason why Landon Roop was a great call is, you know, first of all,
pat on the back.
Well, he was going to be really, really cheap. I mean, he didn't cost anybody anything. So hopefully nobody would be that angry. I have seen somebody very angry about Landon Roop. And I was like, how much did he cost you? Like, you know, like this was an end game sort of idea. You know, this wasn't like, you know, go and get him for $20 in the auction. I hope you understood that. So, you know, I love like fifth and sixth starters on Giants for that reason, you know, because it's like, yeah, how could you go wrong? It's like you're not going to spend that much.
It's a fantastic
worst case scenario. Yeah. You get someone who's usable at home, and Roop before he had the injury had a 2.63 ERA at home. Now, you know, it wasn't great at on the road, 4.76, but if you used him judiciously, you probably got like a low threes ERA and some wins and some strikeouts, and that's the whole deal that you want from the back end guys. So if we want to jump right into it, I've got another giant.
Who we got?
My new Landon Roop. You're never going to guess.
Come on, hit me.
Carson Seymour.
Oh, you're going with that one. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. If you take Carson Seymour's pitch map,
yeah,
like the movements that he makes and his arm angle, and you overlay them, he's a near 100% perfect match for Clay Holmes.
Oh.
Now, that describes someone that does not have ace upside. I'm not telling you that Carson Seymour is going to be a top 30 pitcher. I'm telling you that he has a chance to be like Landon Roop, a top 75, top 80 type pitcher that won't cost you much. The thing that's missing is the sweeper, which is important for Clay Holmes' success. However, having spoken to Carson Seymour, he says his number one thing he's doing in the offseason is working on the sweeper. And when I spoke to Landon Roop last year, he said, my number one thing I'm doing in the offseason is working on a cutter so I can be a good starter. So I just see too many parallels here to ignore. I don't even know that he has a rotation spot to go into the season. He's going to be up against the free agency acquisitions. But also, if you think about it, the Giants have like two guys under contract next year that you would just put in pen in Logan Webb and Robbie Ray, and everybody else. I mean, you could even if you put Roop in third, like fourth and fifth is there's Wizenhunt, there's Birdsong, maybe
free there's agent. Blade Tidwell, there's Blade Mason Tidwell, Black, Keaton like. Wynn, yeah. Tristan Beck, who just threw about 40.
Wynn has been kind of trending towards the pen, I think. They've been he's been doing that sort of up and down optioning that he's on like the pen schedule. When they need an arm in the pen, they pick him up out of the minors. So I think maybe Wynn's out of that race. But yes, I mean, there's still a lot of arms, a lot of people he has to go past. But it seems to me in this day and age, that learning a sweeper can't be the hardest thing to do, especially if you're already kind of a sweeper curve guy. I mean, you're a sinker a curve guy. And he has the seam shifted sinker that Clay Holmes has. So that's already kind of cool to be like a 50 degree arm slot guy with an incredible sinker like that.
Absolutely. And you know, it's so easy that Eno and I are going to actually learn how to throw a sweeper this winter.
You know what I discovered?
Yeah, go ahead.
The curveball, the knuckle curve that I taught my son might actually be a sweeper.
Because why is that? He just doesn't get on top of it enough? He tilts it over?
Yes, because he's a kid and like he doesn't quite get all the way over. But also, I don't know if I showed him this, but where he's putting it is more like a sweeper than a curveball. So he had one session with a new coach who taught him to put it more on the horseshoe, like a curveball, like more on there.
Right.
Like more like going down like that. And I don't know if I told him to, but like he's been doing the knuckle curve like towards
the middle. Yeah.
Towards the middle, which is sweeper. Kind of, this is a sweeper. Sweeper goes across the middle like this.
So as I've always said about Rich Hill is that we classified his breaking ball as a curveball, but it was a sweeper. But all it was the same thing of a curveball. Instead of going over it, you're going to the side of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's always about just where the arm angle is.
Also, my son has a lower arm slot. So you kind of...
Okay. So that makes
very sideways curveball.
I mean, really, if you think about the classic 12-6 curveball, that usually comes with a high arm angle. Right. And then if you take that arm angle and said, cool, we're not going to be close to the Y axis. We're going to be close to the X axis now. Mm-hmm. That's going to turn into the sweeper movement. Right.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, he's had one session with a new coach and he's doing a traditional curveball grip. And he said it was more 12-6. And so I said, all right, well, just call the one I taught you a sweeper and you can probably use both, you know.
Yeah. That didn't help out Will Warren. Okay. Just kidding. Just kidding. All right. I like that pick of Carson Seymour. He certainly has the velocity 95, 96 as well. And yes, Clay Holmes is not going to be, you know, it's not the house you want, right? The Adobe is whatever. It's not the mansion.
Might be a high whip. Might not be the best strikeout rate, but like,
however, yeah, there is value in that. Just identifying who is it in your 15 teamers already that, hey, look, this guy could just get volume and like, be a steady arm every single week. The Giants should likely win games again. It's great home
park. Warning, there's value. A lot of mine are you're going to roll your eyes at them and they're going to be more 15 team league guys.
Well, okay. You know what's funny, Eno, is I was going to tell you about I want to do like a whole thing one time just like learning how to pitch for 2 months and do a whole mini series on that, but there's no way, I have no time. So, what I'm doing instead is I'm hosting a panel at First Pitch Arizona. Same thing. And it's going to be how to draft past pick 300 for starting pitchers. And that's actually going to be more of a focus for your 15 teamers.
Yeah.
So then it is your 12s. And I think a lot of people believe that I'm just the one that, you know, chases the shiny squirrel. And you want to do that in 12 teamers. You do, because you are able to burn and churn effectively. And you can chase them a little bit. If it's not soaring, you go to the next thing. There's always kind of another thing to chase, right? And in 15 teamers, well, I actually love getting my Matthew Boyds and my Seth Lugos and Merrill Kelly's, essentially like, all right, who are the quality start focused arms, right? And who there is the a whole dudes? Thing about
you're
that.
You're going to come up with a boring dude right here.
Yeah, well, it's not boring that boring. I think that next year, Cade Povich is going to be a fantastic ad for 15 teams.
Yeah, that could be. I could see it.
I see him already developing more with consistency with his four seamer upstairs with changeup and curveball. And we just saw Jose Suarez have an amazing game yesterday. Okay, nine strikeouts and seven innings against, yeah, sure, the Nationals. Still, you got to do that. And you forgot that Jose Suarez was still pitching anywhere, let alone starting on a whim. As the 51st pitcher for Atlanta this year. I'm making that up, guys. It's not the 51st starter or pitcher that they've had or whatever. It's ridiculous, though. And you've seen lefties have these changeups and be effective. And this is just kind of the story of 2025, I would say. Cade Povich is that and has a wider arsenal, too. The curveball has become a major part of that approach as well. I see it, you know, even from his debut, we were calling him a mini Max Fried. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you see the Orioles rely on him every 5 days next year, and he just kind of forms into that sub four ERA routine quality start pitcher who should get more wins. The Orioles should get more wins than they did this year. So
yeah, I'd like to see him use the cutter as a show me, like we've talked about.
Those. Oh man, I tried convincing him
with him. Yeah, like, I mean, when I talked to him, he seemed like maybe it'll come back. You know?
Yeah,
like,
right. That's a no. That's a really nice guy saying no.
Yeah, well, the exchange has been good for him, and you know, he has an assortment of pitches, and the park isn't that bad. He has good command. I think he's starting to dial in his approach. He showed me. He's been using Trevor May's, approach to prepping for games. So it's interesting because basically it's, this hitter likes it here and here, and like it's a basic plan for like, oh, I'm going to throw my fastball here. What's nice about it though is it includes kind of missed locations.
Okay.
So you know, and there's the act of note taking. The act of note taking. Remind like you know you remember better. Yes, so by absolutely. Just writing down this like note, like taking these notes for what he's going to do to each hitter, he sort of remembers the hot zones, the cold zones. He remembers some of that. He doesn't have to. He can maybe he'll start shaking off next year,
right?
Because he's got more of a plan in his head, and he's starting to put that together with what he's seeing with body language wise. So I also just was impressed with his intellect and thought he was a smart dude. If I have anybody that's like Cade Povich on my list, it might be McGreevy.
Oh, yeah, Michael McGreevy. Before we go off of Povich for a second, I did a series last year interviewing pitchers and kind of going over single games of theirs in totality and just kind of talking about the decisions. And there were two pitchers who brought their notebook to talk about these starts with me. And it was Pablo Lopez and Cole Reagans.
Yeah. Yeah,
and how are you not fans?
Derek Skubal, you know, showed me some of his notebook, and like you know, hey, that's three pitchers you want to be like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, and I think that Pablo Lopez, in a way, is a real guy for someone like Povich to look up for. I know they're not like the same handedness, not even really the same arsenal, but it's like, you know, find your strengths and then build from there. You right. know, and like build an arsenal from like the inside out and like just keep adding pitches and, you know, figuring out how to play them off each other. So I think that's it's a little different. I think for Skubal, there was some dominance in there already. And for him, it was just like a couple final clicks, you know.
I mean, going from 94.5 to 98 helped.
Yeah, you're right.
A little bit.
You can't be that easy to be like, oh, Povich, just throw 300 miles an hour harder.
I mean, I will say this. When it comes to velocity, I always get really excited when velocity is added to pitchers who have never had it.
Mm.
Right? Because that means that they have gotten where they are based on command and sequencing and wide arsenal, as opposed to those who come up and they have it already. And that's less enticing, of course. Because that's not really been what they had to rely on that velocity, and then it's just kind of like, oh no, that doesn't work. What do I do? It's a lot harder to figure out the whole feel and command than it is just maintaining the velocity, I would say. Or if you already have it, is what I'm trying to get at. So McGreevy is a fascinating one, and I totally see what you're getting at. You like the park and the defense, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of it.
Oh my gosh. Is it all just going to be park and defense?
No. I mean,
are we sure about that?
I mean, he's a true six pitch pitcher. I mean,
he
throws a lot of pitches. And I think it allows him also, it's not necessarily he throws all six pitches to both hands, but it allows him to be at least three, four pitcher type guy to each hand. Mm-hmm. And then he just has great command of all of his pitches. And it's not just great command of all of his pitches in his rookie season. It's great command of all his rookie pitches that, you know, is backed up by scouting reports. Fangraphs has a 60 present, 70 future command on him.
Wow.
So if there's anybody who's going to take over for, I don't know, the Seth Lugo, Merrill Kelly, you know, brand, I feel like it's somebody like this.
Yeah, that makes all sense. I mean, I've really been impressed with his ability to locate sinkers inside and get outs with it. I mean, I streamed him yesterday against the Reds carpet. Dude, because it's the Reds carpet.
You know, I I picked him up like 3 weeks ago in an auto new league that I've never won. That's in finals right now. And I picked him up for this, for that start, because yes. It's really hard in auto new, because you have to buy them in waivers, and like, you don't stream in that usually. But I was like, if I make it to the finals, Michael McGreevy against Cincinnati, that's not bad. And it was because of this show. Because remember, we did the scheduled show.
Oh, that's right. And that helped you out. Oh, that's good.
And I was like, oh my gosh, look at McGreevy's schedule. The Giants and the Reds. I love it. And after that show, I put a dollar down, won him in an auction for a dollar. And I just pitched him last night in the finals, and I'm ahead.
Beautiful. Oh, that's such a good story. And guys, you know, I want to put this as like our quote of, you know, one of those reviews on a book or something that says, even I listen to the advice on this podcast. You know? Right. Yeah, even I'm doing things better on my team because of it.
Well, shout out awesome. To James Anderson, because James Anderson always liked McGreevy, and we picked him up in a really deep league that we had. And I didn't because of the stuff plus and dropped him. So shout out to James Anderson for getting that one right. And sorry for dropping him.
Well, it's interesting. I'm sure you've done this, looking at the future value guys that are 60 command and higher, and seeing how often they beat out any projections or stuff plus numbers, and where that kind of balance could be. Because I think those are the ones that, you know, when we talk about location plus, we've done this a lot, or about command, we feel like it's a lot more noise because it's across so many pitchers, and it kind of becomes like, all right, well, it's not really doing much. But if you look at it among only, say, a bucket of the top 10th percentile or top 20th or something like that, I've always thought about this with the different models that we have. Like, I'm doing that with PLV and with Kyle, being like, all right, but what if we match this and this and this among, you know, the bottom or the top? And I'm curious to find out eventually about command and just how much
there's some misses on here,
top 10th percentile or so.
There's some misses on here, but what you can do is if you pair overall future value with command, so then you're not just looking at command, because if you look just as command, like there's Dylan Dodd and.
Right. Well, right. It's like the threshold of that. And then you have stuff, or you have a fastball with that, or you have a really good changeup or a breaking ball with it. Right.
Yeah. So here are the guys from the 2023 report from Fangraphs.
Nice. Okay.
That have both a 50 future value, at least, which is starterish. It's like it's above a reliever, and also have a 60 or 70 command future value. So. Okay. Yuri Perez, Andrew Painter, Taj Bradley.
What? I'm sorry. Wait, can we just stop for a second? Stop for a second. Command or control here?
It's command. 50 present, 60 future. Hey, like others, I mean, there's always noise introduced by just how they saw him and what he was looked like in the minors and whatever it was, you know?
That's a really good point. Absolutely. So, I'm not like, in any way discredit any stats or anything like that. That's the one that jumps off the page, of course. But yeah, keep going.
It's not the biggest miss. And then there's Logan Allen, who's kind of what you're talking about, is like someone who still made the big leagues, still pitched, but, you know, maybe pitched above where you might have expected due to stuff. So another one is Tanner Bibee, Matthew Liberatore, Louis Varland, Jordan Wicks, David Festa, Hayden Wesnensky. And that's pretty much it. So that's a pretty good list. I mean, that's a pretty good list. I mean, there are some misses on there, but if you just put those two together,
right?
I'd say you're kind of a three. You're getting like a 75% hit rate, you know?
Right. I wonder if that is just Logan Hagen being really good at understanding future value too. If it is just about command as well, but yeah, that is something to think about with McGreevy. It legitimately is. I mean, I remember watching him and just seeing some of these plots at the end of the day. It's like, oh, cool. Every single sinker is arm side to right-handers. Every single cutter that you wanted is inside to left-handers. Changeups are staying away from them. Like, you don't need to see a lot to understand that it is so difficult to have more than one game of just nailing down precision and pitch separation in this way.
How about let's do the other way?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is 50 future value at least, and 30, 35, 45 command.
Oh, beautiful.
Right?
Yeah.
Bottom shelf command. Griff McGarry.
Oh, yeah.
DL Hall.
Oh no.
Yeah. Also, it's really hard to do this because there's not that many guys with 50 future value down here.
Oh, sure.
Next guy is, geez, I'm really struggling.
I mean, you don't have anything.
It's a big part of the valuation process, right?
Like, yeah.
Definitely, if you have a really bad command grid, like he's not going to really give you a great place on this list. I'm still struggling. here we go. Kyle Harrison.
Uh-huh.
Bobby Miller.
No.
Kodai Senga, Jake Eater, Tink Hentz, Ben Brown, Dre Jameson, Andrew Abbott, Wilmer Flores, Ryan Nelson, Jack Leiter, Cade Cavalli. Now, I'd say the hit rate on this side is more like 25%.
Well, this is okay. Hold on a second. So you have Ryan Nelson in there, Andrew Abbott,
and Kodai Senga. Those are the hits.
Kodai Senga.
And then you maybe Leiter and Cavalli, you're still maybe. So it's more like
Bobby Miller for 70% of a season was a hit.
No, we're putting that as a miss.
Then it was a loss.
I'm willing to. I mean, we could put on, like, is he on your list of people that could break out next year? I think he'll be the Dodgers closer next year.
That's what you think?
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh yeah. No. Yeah. No.
What happens when you have 45 command?
Usually. But the thing is, I don't see. Okay. I watched a lot of Bobby Miller. I'm sure you did too.
And I was wrong about the command. Every time I see him, I'm like, I was wrong about the command. It's bad.
Well, that was when he had a horrible year.
Mm-hmm.
In his good year, like it was all going generally where he wanted it to go. It wasn't dotted necessarily, but like, okay, cool. The slider is generally down and away, right? The four seamer is, I don't know what the Dodgers honestly wanted him to do, so fine. but the changeup was down generally. The curveball was here. Like, it wasn't, when I think about 35 command, I think like, cool, you're going to have like a 9-10% walk rate.
I thought the fastball command was pretty bad.
Interesting.
I thought he like ripped it arm side a lot.
Uh huh. Yeah. It's possible. It could have been that. Man, but the thing is also, it's not like when I think of closer, I think of better fastball, like better whiffable fastball, you know?
Yeah, but there's also guys who out velo their shape.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like Robert Suarez out velo their shape.
Kind of. You know?
Yeah. There are guys who out velo their shape, so.
Yeah. Oh, man, that just makes me so sad.
He would sit 99, 100 as a closer.
That just makes me so sad. He has enough pitches that he shouldn't be a reliever.
He theoretically has enough pitches. I mean,
I know.
As much as people yell at me about that, like I'm yelling at myself about Von Miller. It's like,
yeah, I will never forget that first pitch in Arizona.
How many pitches does Jackson Jobe have, and how many pitches does he theoretically have? The numbers are not the same.
That's right. I mean, like Lucas Giolito's curveball, that was like the talk of the town. Well, it was really just three things, actually. Fastball, change, and eventually slider, right? I totally get that. I mean, there's also Zebby Matthews who really kind of turns into a three pitch guy when he has like five or six or something too.
Is that what's going on with Zebby Matthews? Cause I want
to, well, actually Zebby Matthews, I think, is a good example of this kind of thing we're talking about with command, because there are games where he's actually being able to put pitches where he wants to. But even last night against the Yankees where he got destroyed, It's not execution of things. Like, if he does the things right with what he has, Zebby Matthews will succeed. But he can't, you know? It's like he has 60% of the command he should have, right? And it's just frustrating to watch. Like, you look at a strike zone plot after the game, and you're like, yeah, I know he threw strikes, but like none of them were like, oh, yeah, you hit that thing. Oh, and you're nice. You nailed that. And you look at the plot, it's like, yeah, this
plus
kind
seems
of
to suggest his breaking ball command is spotty.
That's
what's worse. That's what it suggests.
In
terms of the four seam and sinker, looks mostly good. There's a couple bad games, but the cutter, the slider, and the curve just alternate games. There's one game on here, maybe two, where he's got good command of all three.
Now, I would say with the fastballs that I've learned this at least from POV. We've talked about it before, Location Plus, about like how it favors throwing in the zone, essentially, right? And Zebby throws them in the zone, but it's not in the edges or on the edges or where he kind of wants to, where it's set up necessarily, but he keeps it over the plate, right? And I want a term for it because I see this so often, with pitchers that I like, and that's commonly why they don't pan out, is you see it, you see an at bat and they've got it and the stuff is the same, and then it's just, oh, that pitch wasn't supposed to be there, or like, oh, this thing got hit, because you're not locked in, you know. And yeah, I'm going to be out on Zebby Matthews, but I am going to be on someone else.
You're out on him. Wins.
I'm out on him next year. Yeah.
Well,
I think it's too much of a headache.
The average zone rate is 52.4 and his is 53.7. Yeah, right. It could be.
I just think it's a headache at this point. I like going for guys where I say, cool, I think what you do, if you do the same thing again, I think it's going to work better. It's like slowly going to develop easily, or like this pitch is going to get a little bit better, or whatever. Or cool, you have this one tweak, you're going to throw your curveball more, or you're going to, oh man, you have more velocity, or you're in a better situation now.
So I have one
Zebby. It's like, I don't know. I'm just hoping that if it gets fixed, right? And that to me makes it more hesitant for me.
Where I think there's an easy one for me. Mick Abel just needs to, I think he just needs to.
Eno, I was setting up the ad break saying I was about, I've got a guy on the Twins that I am in on. And then here comes the bowling ball through the door. I mean, no, serious, let me talk about Mick Abel.
Well, we don't have a rundown, Nick. We don't have a rundown.
I know we don't have a rundown.
And if we did, I
all
might.
All right, well, if you want to hear about Mick Abel, you're going to have to wait until after this break. All right, Eno, so tell me about Mick Abel.
Well, I just feel like there's an easy switch. I was looking at something. You know, the stuff on his curve is better than a slider, but the location on a slider is better than his curve. And I think that he struggles with location. So I would just, even though the curve is better, I would just sort of switch the percentages.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Mick Abel, when I've seen him this year, really good fastball. I think in his last start, we have our stat Fan 4 Plus, which is the fantastic four elements that induce a whiff when it comes to stuff like attack angle and velocity and extension and vert, and 122 Fan 4 Plus in his last AAA start. Mick Abel on that four seamer is, ooh, that's good. And when it comes to command, I've always liked watching Mick Abel. There have been a couple games where just, nope, that's not it, but I can explain it a little bit, like jitters and when he first came up to the Twins and so on. And he hasn't really gone into rhythm properly yet. I do like that he has multiple breaking balls. I like that he has a very good foundation of a fastball. I don't watch Mick Abel and really feel that he is a chaotic arm. I think he is someone who's very able to execute what he needs to do. So I really hope that the Twins give him that opportunity. I mean, right now it's Pablo Lopez. I guess Joe Ryan, maybe not. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they deal him or whatever. Bailey Ober, Simeon Woods Richardson, Zebby Matthews, Taj Bradley. You also have David Festa, hopefully at some point as well. He had shoulder inflammation in July. We haven't heard from him since.
Yeah, that's a lot going on. I mean, I personally wouldn't have SWR in my rotation.
Mm-hmm.
They've used him more than I would have. You're right. He might be sixth or seventh on that depth chart going in. So
you just saw Simeon Woods Richardson have two phenomenal games too. I mean, he's now throwing a splitter and I go, what?
Yeah.
I don't think he's out of the woods yet. Don't worry, guys. And I don't believe in Taj Bradley. Bailey Ober, he's barely getting back to 90 miles per hour right now.
So there's daylight. There's daylight. There's a lot of options, but there's daylight. I mean, Simeon Woods Richardson to this date has a 4.32 ERA and all his projections are for like a 4.5 to 4.7.
Right.
You could say he's a ERA projections beater, but the ERA itself is not that good. So it's like, oh, he's beaten projections to the tune of a 4.3. Yeah.
Right.
So I the Sierra for him, Sierra's remarkably predictive as a single stat. The Sierra for him for his lifetime is 4.59. So I think there's an opportunity there. And it's like, you know, you look at another way. I like to look at the heat maps that are just on Savant, like on their player page, just like, you know, like the four seamer is good. It's in where you want it. It's not really wild. Maybe it's a little bit wild, but sometimes it's wild up top, which is a good place to miss. You'll get some swings up there. You know, all of his pitches are around where they're supposed to be. The curveball is chaotic. I think that's the one where he misses high and tight sometimes, and he turfs it in the ground sometimes. So I think I would just be like, let's throw the slider a lot and make the curveball your third pitch, you know, your fourth pitch. And maybe just something like that could be what clicks in for him.
I mean, he hasn't really been throwing the curveball. It's been a splitter and slider to pair with that four seamer of the past few starts. So that might be it for Simeon Woods Richardson. We'll see.
No, I was talking about McAble.
Oh, McAble. Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. McAble's like his heat chart on his curveball is a little bit all over the place. But the other ones aren't that scary. The
slider and the changeup also. I think it's a changeup as well. Because he had four last time I saw him. I believe it was a changeup for lefties. I think that McAble is, as you mentioned with the four-seamer command being upstairs like that, with that good foundation already, I think he's got it. It's going to be there. Who else is on your list? Because mine was McAble. That was like Shazam. My shiny squirrel is McAble as the guy that I definitely want to go for. But
okay,
I
have a guy where I think there's just a pitch switch, just like McAble. Uh-huh. And I'm just, again, I'm looking at like location numbers and stuff numbers for you know this guy, and what. You know, before I say his name, he's a guy who's stuff first, command second, coming back from injury, with inconsistent pitch type usage from game to game. And what that allows me to do is look at the game logs and say, oh, this is interesting. When Cade Cavalli uses his four seam less, he has better command and has better games overall. Yeah. And then you look at his overall locations, and the location plus on the four seam, 91. That's not really good. That's actually really bad. And then for the sinker, it's 101. And in fact, if you took the four seam out, he would probably have around a league average location plus because he can locate the slider. So he's like a secret sinker slider guy who they've taught a four seam. You know, there's lots of these guys where I think his natural arm slot wants him to throw sinker slider. That's why he has better command to those places. Mm-hmm. So my fix would just be very simple. It's just really dial down the use of four seam against righties, you know, and just, you know, be more of a sinker slider guy against righties. And then if you do walk the occasional lefty because you're using more four seams, that's fine. But that would be my plan for Cade Cavalli. And, you know, external stats, external situation is that their defense can only get better. I think, I hope.
Maybe, we'll see.
Maybe. but also, the way that it works traditionally with surgery is that your command is better in year two. So, you know, I'm sort of betting on a little bit of recovery. I'm betting on good stuff numbers. There's pedigree here, too. I mean, Cade Cavalli was, you know, a first-round pick. So, I think it hasn't been that fun this year riding the train. But it was also the first year back on a guy who, let's check it out, had 56 present, 50 future command. I've never seen that. I think it's probably supposed to be 50-50. Okay. So at least he's above that 45 number that we were so scared of earlier.
Right. Yeah. I mean, with Cade Cavalli, I have been really impressed with his ability to go down and in with the sinker. I mean, he really just like concentrates there a ton against right-handers. And the real, I mean, I'm surprised you didn't really mention it a lot, was the curveball, the power curve that he has.
Oh, I mean, that's his foundation. That's his secondary. Yeah. I was just thinking like, how do we improve his command? And so I'm looking at his fastball mix.
Basically. Well, what I did see in the past couple starts was a pullback of the curveball. And I'm going, what are you doing? And I understand that it has a 517 BABIP at the moment, which is fourth percentile. I mean, that's horrific. But it's probably because guys are like, well, yeah, that's probably your best thing. Oh, cool. You're just going to give us the worst thing. All right, great. We'll hit that. And that's kind of how it felt like in the past couple starts. Mm. I'm with you that leaning away from that four seamer is a good idea. It's something that he does keep upstairs a little bit. He can use it as a surprise pitch at 97. But yeah, against right handers,
it's more like a two strike pitch.
Yeah, it's a 9% swing strike rate to right-handers. which is pretty shocking, a 10% mistake rate, despite 97 mile per hour velocity is just, oh gosh, while it goes down to 7% against lefties, a 14% swing strike rate, a 70% strike rate against left-handers for that four-seamer. And to lean even more into that with the sinker against right-handers, it's only a 5% mistake rate. And it's so funny to me because we normally see the reverse. We see more mistakes thrown by sinkers because sinkers, generally when they're in the middle of the play, are easier to hit.
More and more movement. Yeah, they're sideways. Yeah.
So to see that he has half the mistake rate on sinkers, if you don't know what a mistake rate is, it's double the chance of being a hit, according to PLV. And yeah, he beautifully puts that inside a right-handers at 97, 77% strike rate as well. It's clearly the foundation that he should be having against right-handers. So I completely agree with what you're saying here. I think that's a really good call. You want to know my ridiculous one? I think you should have a ridiculous one too. You know, I like to have those stupid ones. Everyone's like, come on, there's no way. And I go, I know there's no way, but I want the Nationals to trade away Mitchell Parker.
Yeah.
Just
go somewhere else.
This guy needs a full on reset in a new place. It was just the most destructive season for him, right? I mean, completely just pain and going out there every 5 days, constantly allowing these 5-run games, 6-run games, and whatnot. And he's had these little moments of glory where he does four seamers upstairs. He goes, curveballs are actually properly down, and he has a slider that he mixes in between. And it's beautiful when he does that. But it's just so inconsistent and he can't quite get to it. He used to be actually hinting at 94 at times. He's at 93 now. About 7 feet of extension, 17 inches of vert, but he is a bit over the top. So that vert maybe isn't as good, but maybe someone can teach him a cutter and goes inside off of that. The slider does well against left-handers. I just think that there is something here to this who is not a 5.85 ERA pitcher in a 147 whip with a 14% K rate. I just refuse to believe that. And I don't have faith that he's going to be different all of a sudden next year, staying exactly where he is. I think he needs to just get out. And I think the Nationals will be like, yeah, sure, whatever. We'll have Josiah Gray back. We need some room anyway. It's fine. So that's my dark horse play. Mitchell Parker gets traded in the offseason. And then is okay on another team, like a 4.2 ERA. That's it.
I mean, those guys that change of scenery when they get somewhere new and get a new pitch, the new coaching staff. That's, I wish I could, predict somebody like that. Let me look at the coming free agents. You know, that's almost like an interesting place to look because. At least you know those guys are going to change.
And, yeah, right. Or in all likelihood.
I mean, well, they're going to change teams. I mean, you know, in all likelihood, they could go back. You're right.
Right.
But like if you sort by market value and you do that, you get like Fromber and like Freddie Peralta and like, what am I asking them to do? You know, I'm not asking them to do anything. So I'm going to zoom down to the bottom of the list. Mm-hmm. We're looking at Chris Paddock. could someone teach him a breaking ball?
I mean, he tried so hard with the slider this year. You have Zach Gallen. Maybe there's something that's fixed there. Not even as a, you know, not quite what we're talking about today, but still that's kind of vein of, hey, much better next year in some way. It's kind of strange. He found his changeup recently. Zach Gallen just dominated the Giants with it after being really more of that death ball curve for a while, Zach Gallen. So hopefully that's a major thing. Walker Buehler also will change teams probably for the enjoying the fourth team in a year and a half or so.
I just think the stuff sloppage it's just been too
much. I'm with you there.
Jose Urquidy.
He's Jose on the Urquidy right now.
A competent number four next year. How about that?
Yeah, that's a fun one. He's on the Tigers right now. We might actually see a glimpse of him before the season ends. And speaking of the Tigers, Sawyer Gibson Long, you know.
Oh, always. Just always. Just put him on the rundown. He's just always on the rundown.
Well, I mean, this is an easy one, though. This is easy.
All right. Well,
that's Tyler McGill, you know, okay? It's
I got an easy one.
I think we literally had like 8 episodes in a row talking about Tyler McGill.
Tyler McGill. Well, we're pushing
is he free agent next year?
Long, dude.
But Sawyer Gibson Long, actually, it wouldn't be surprised, is part of that rotation next year. I mean, Troy Melton will not be a sleeper. He's actually going to be a wide awake one, I think. He's going to be... It's
because we talk about too much. He showed too much.
He's going to get the playoff tax,
goodness.
Too.
Yeah, and he showed, like, no model doesn't like... You know, every model likes him, right. So it's like all the projection systems are going to like him.
But the thing about Sawyer Gibson Long is that I actually do think you give him the runway, you give him a proper offseason. Hey, Cole, you are in this rotation. Yeah, this is a guy with elite extension, an elite sinker with proper sink. You want to find like the proper neckbeard approach that is going inside and outside off the plate and slightly underneath the plate and ignoring the top of the zone. That's what Sawyer Gibson Long can do from the right side. I think there's legitimate value to be had in this when he gets runway. And he's coming back from, I believe it was UCL reconstruction or internal brace, not proper TJS. Yeah, give him some time. Obviously, as you're saying, second year command, everything like that. I'm still going to keep circling it. I know that I was a year early this year, guys. I get it. But that doesn't mean I'm out on him forever. You know, he should be traded too. I'm surprised this guy wasn't traded at the deadline, honestly. This was the perfect, like, sneaky team acquire this guy, and no one did it. I don't know why. It's Reed Detmers.
I thought you were going to say Bailey Falters.
Someone did. Someone did trade for Bailey Falters.
And it didn't work.
I guess it would be A-R-A-Y, and it was R-O-Y. Okay? I was that close. But yeah, what's your take on Sawyer Gibson Long? Do you think that I'm reaching at straws here?
Hi. The one thing that I just worry about with him is that... you know, some of the numbers are inflated by his role.
So interesting.
When you look at, when you look at what he's done, like, yes, you know, there are the models like him, you know, for example, Stuff Plus has a 96 on him with the 103 location and, you know, 5 pitches, you know, an average four seam, an average sinker. But then you look at number of innings per appearance, and you're talking about, 3 or 4 innings per appearance.
Right.
So you wouldn't, you know, our normal tax is like five points of Stuff Plus going from reliever to starter. Now he's not going to lose that because he's already going 3-4 innings per appearance. That's more than a reliever. But what if he is more, you know, 93 Stuff Plus as a starter? And, you know, I'm just like, they're full on reticence to like use him as a starter, has been problematic for me.
Well, they did just try to do it. And then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
they had to pull starts. Him out of that.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I will say on pushback on that is I think I'm making this, I'm going in on him with the assumption that he is not the pitcher that we saw this year, right? Like he has not really had the opportunity.
Okay,
I think
he so maybe he,
came
like
up
he doesn't
sooner.
Throw the sinker that much. You wanted to throw the sinker more? Because you're talking about the sinker. You like
the
it.
Sinker has actually been a little bit worse this year than we saw prior. And I would think that there is a chance that he can get that a little bit more of that drop back. I also believe he was brought up faster than they wanted him to. I don't remember what happened exactly. Maybe it was Job getting hurt where they had the spot open all of a sudden. They were planning it to be like 2-3 starts later or so. And I think that affected him a little bit. And I really can't emphasize enough how much having a routine and knowing your security and saying, look, you are the number 4 starter. You are the 5. That does wonders. For pitchers, especially a guy like Sawyer Gibson Long, who has not had 10 starts in a row for any team yet. He only had a handful that first season. Then he got, he had to get surgery. And now this was his first one, right? Back. So I I'm banking this on, hey, does he have a rotation spot? If he's out of the camp in that rotation, I'm in on Sawyer Gibson Long because I think that he is going to develop well with that routine and be a little bit different than we saw this year.
Okay, I'm going to take two Padres. One is really obvious, and we've talked about him a lot, and I'm not going to break him down that much. I'm just going to say that next year, because of the laws of good year, bad year, he's going to have a good year.
Yeah, of course, that's Dylan Cease, yes.
Dylan Cease, yes. Done. The other one is J.P. Sears, who has not done a lot to endear himself in the eyes of fantasy players this year, and probably also not Padres fans, because with the Padres, he has put up a 6.16 ERA and has looked like unusable. However, I will just point out that just on things like peripheral strikeout rate, walk rate, the things that have less noise on them, you know, he's been the same guy. So he had a 4.50 Sierra with the Athletics, and he has a 4.36 with the Padres. His velo went down a little bit with the Padres, but he's also kind of down and again, up again, traveling a lot. So I don't know that, you know, I'm putting too much worry on that. The biggest source of the being worse was the home run rate. Now, a lefty with poor fastballs, like, that could be a problem. But what I see with him is a sweeper, a slider, that are good. And that's weird because he's a lefty. That's not the best thing to say about him. But the changeup, I think it has flashed good. And what I'm doing here is dreaming a little bit upon it and saying, hey, here's a guy that I think is going to be their fifth starter, you know, because they've run out of money and they acquired him to be such, you know, and will get a chance. And he's going to work with one of the best pitching coaches in the game, in Ruben Niebla. And we'll have more time than, you know, four starts between El Paso and San Diego to kind of hash it out. I think a spring with Ruben Niebla could be really good for J.P. Sears. And I'm not predicting that he's going to be great, but I think he will be good next year.
You know, what's interesting is when they acquired J.P. Sears, I had a feeling. I was thinking about this a bit of, okay, all right, what does J.P. Sears do? How do you fix this? And once they sent him down to the minors, it was, oh, cool. They're going to try to really change something about this, right? Four-seamer upstairs, kind of the sweeper in the middle, change up underneath that sandwich, right? And he's not really had the history of pinpoint pitch separation. It's been a clutter and kind of like, okay, cool, inside the zone and whatnot, but J.P. Sears hasn't really been this standard for good command, right? And I'm thinking, okay, cool. They're going to send him down. They're going to fix this. They see something in J.P. Sears that they acquired him, and I don't think they believe in what he currently is to just jump into the team and be effective. So they brought him down to the minors, and they brought him back up, and he looked exactly the same. And I was a little surprised by that. There wasn't really much of a difference or evolution. However, I still believe that they see something else here for J.P. Sears, that we won't see the same addition in 2026. So I like that call in that way of saying, hey, look, I think if to find a proper sleeper, you have to expect something different. You can't just say, he did this thing, but he got unlucky, thus he's going to be good.
You can't always just look at, you know, there's a lot of guys who come to camp with a legitimate new pitch or have actually changed mechanics. And it's really hard to project that. There can't be like, if this dude like actually had this pitch, that'd be great. But then, you know, you don't really have a reason to say he could have it, you know? Yeah. I do notice that they raised his arm angle some. I do notice that his changeup dropped and there's some changes to its spin. So I think they probably changed it maybe to more of a four seam changeup from a two seam. So there's some stuff going on here, but you know, for them to really get their hands into it, it may take an off season.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And so I like that call a lot. We're going to have one more each. We're going to talk about them after this break. All right, Eno. I mean, I don't know how much of a sleeper they are because I think they're starting to be really obvious to people, but I really like Joey Cantillo. And I'm obsessed with extension, but you know what? Extension's great. Okay. Especially when guys get their money and get their extensions. Okay. But I am going to do a different one instead because all right, everyone knows about me and an extension and how fun it is and blah, 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 blah. So I'm going to say someone that y'all have completely forgotten about, Spencer Arrighetti. Okay. The Astros are going to need more people in the rotation. They expect them to be healthy out of camp. They expect them to be regular every 5 days. We liked him entering this year, and he never really got settled in. Actually, when he started to showcase it, then all of a sudden the Pasta Pirate was al dente, and he had al dente in his arm. I don't know. Whatever. Doesn't matter. He was out. All right. The noodle was wet, and I expect him to be part of that rotation entering next season. You could even throw Christian Javier in there too. I mean, these are the kind of scenarios of where we don't have a long season from these guys. And we can say, great, they just got themselves back into the game. And now they can actually take that step forward as they were supposed to before. I can see that with Astros guys like Christian Javier and Spencer Arrighetti. And don't forget, the Astros just always find a way to win right now. And it's good to have Astros pitchers. It's just a good thing. Jason Alexander, look at that. There's a neckbeard for you. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So those are my, like, just, I wanted to get those out of the way. Make sure guys don't forget that, because you will see them past pick 300 easily in your fantasy drafts. Like, that's, they're not going to go earlier than that. I'd be absolutely shocked. They're too many pitchers. So I've circled them, and I don't expect your pitcher, you know, to be part of the Athletics. It's just too bad of a park. You can't do it.
I was going to do it.
Osvaldo Beto or JT Ginn. I'm just kidding.
It is JT Ginn.
Yeah. I like JT Ginn. JT Ginn's cool.
What I've been doing, just to search, and I think this is a fun thing that you can do on your own, and you can see sort of what my thinking was. I've just been sorting the Stuff Plus leaderboard over at Fangraphs just by pitch. And, you know, what you can do is you do it by forcing fastball, and you realize, man, it's pretty important to have a forcing fastball because everybody who has a really good forcing fastball is really good. Like, the worst guy with a good forcing fastball is Ryan Nelson. And I guess
he's great.
You could throw Yurendris Gomez on there. And you know, then you have like question marks where you're like, oh, Gomez's, you know, command and Ryan Nelson's, you know, his arsenal. How large is it? By the way, I asked him if he was a pronator or a supinator, Ryan Nelson. And he said, is it possibly neither?
Yeah, right. History is an arrow. And there's no, and, like, it's like he doesn't come over his hip, you know, he just goes over his front foot, I guess, completely, right? I don't actually know what the mechanics are, but it's what mentally I'm envisioning.
Yeah, so I don't think he'll ever have a good changeup. He said they're trying to dial in the seam shifted aspect of it. I think more likely he finds a way to separate his slider, cutter, and curve into two or three really good pitches, or at least good pitches.
I mean, you've seen him experiment with curveball, slider, cutter a ton, even in like the last like 10 starts. Like, one game it's the cutter getting more usage, one game it's the slider, one game it's the curve.
He told me he tries to focus on one. He tries to like throw more breaking balls. And then he looks up at the end of the game, and he's like, oh, still 65% fastballs.
If you're trying to envision also his arm action, you can just think of Bart Simpson doing windmill punches against Lisa. That is what his arm looks like, of course, when throwing. But no, Ryan Nelson, yeah, I mean, right. He's trying really hard to figure that out. I would be wish casting a little bit if I said that he would get that. But I just got to think, like, that's it. He has a breakout season ahead of him. Maybe it's just a changeup. Maybe it's just like throw the fast, throw everything exactly the same and just the grip of a changeup instead. And that's it, you know? something.
Yeah, with the edger, try to find that seam shifted that he's talking about. There's, yeah. I mean, there's something there. And so, you know, I did this with every category, including Location Plus. And this isn't, you know, necessarily where I started, but that's where I got Michael McGreevy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a top 25 Location Plus and, you know, like a good big wide mix. And look at that, a couple spots behind Michael McGreevy with the 36th best Location Plus among starters this year is JT Ginn. He also shows up if you sort by sinkers. Yes. You get him as the top 30 in sinkers.
Yeah.
Now, what he doesn't have are secondaries. It's a little bit like my Carson Seymour pick where it's like, I want him to go away and like for the off season and go to Tread or go to Driveline and come back with a killer breaking ball. Because if he throws a sinker that well, I can't believe he can't spin a breaking ball.
Right.
So, you know, I think he can, if he can just find a secondary pitch that matches that sinker and stature, he may always have a little bit of problem with lefties. It is not a good park, but you know what, basically my way of finding sleepers is to find like two or three things out of the five or six things you want. You know, like if yeah. you're talking about hitters, like hitters have, there's five tools, there might be six actual tools. Like if they do all six of those things well, I've learned this from writing so many sleeper articles. If they do all six things well, people are like, that ain't a sleeper. You just came up with right. James Wood. And you're like, yeah, that was James Wood, you know? And so like, you know, for pitchers, if you're like, okay, they need to have like four above average pitches by Stuff Plus and four above average pitches by Location Plus, then you're like, oh, these are all like Tarek Skubal and company. You know, it's like, these aren't sleepers.
You can't predict Troy Melton.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, then you have Troy Melton, and then sometimes the Troy Meltons don't work out. And then you're just like, right. dang it. They clicked. It's like the Bobby Miller thing. They clicked every yeah. damn box. Yeah. So what I do instead for deep sleepers is, what if they click two or three boxes? JT right. Ginn has command, has a sinker. You know, that's two boxes out of, you know, if I can get three boxes, maybe it's more of a, you know, a middle type sleeper. That's more your Mick Abel, your Troy Meltons. They click more boxes, but you know, if they click two boxes, that's already more than a lot of people.
So I love this a lot. And I have one more guy I actually do want to mention. I meant to do it at the first one and I can't believe I forgot him because he's someone I think that you and I have talked about too. But before I say that, I do want to mention, I remember being at First Pitch Arizona and actually alluding to the outside of the 300 SP thing, I was on another panel and Rob Silver was trying to make a jab at me because I was having fun with him about, you know, just how do we predict, you know, who's the best 18 round guy? Because the guys who win FBC or whatever are the ones who get steals in the 18th round, the 19th round. So who is it going to be, you know? And I realized that there are so many of these panels and conversations about who is the next blank? Who yeah. is, right? Who is the next Spencer Strider who came out, you know, bam, there you go. Or who is the next, I don't know, who is the next Bobby Miller when he came up or something, mm-hmm. right? And it always, I think I got it down to, I don't remember the exact number, but I got down to certain facets of just like, all right, this is how you take a guy who's not valued highly. And then all of a sudden the next year they're valued highly. They add velocity in the offseason.
Hmm.
Pretty obvious. They find a new whiff pitch. Okay. They
Here's find my new how speaker. To throw Here's strikes. My new changeup. I'm throwing yeah. a kick change.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. So like there's a new pitch that's really changing everything in the arsenal. Right. Yeah. Four, they finally get opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. They actually are able to go every 5 days and they get the volume that, you know, makes them shoot up the plate rate or whatever.
And four might actually be number one in terms of importance. That's,
right.
You know, like that's why a lot of my sleeper stuff is like opportunity plus good park, you know, like
right. Yeah, exactly. You know? 100%. Yeah. And really tied in with that is health. That they, you know, they're valued low because they don't think that Jacob deGrom is going to be able to throw over 150 innings. There's no chance, mm-hmm. right? And like, okay, obviously he was still drafted highly, but you understand my point.
Yeah.
But that's kind of tied in there. And then it's, and the last one was, what was it? Maybe that's all of them. But essentially you have to find one thing about them that you think at the very least is going to change about them. Oh, the last one was that, well, he's done it before and he just had a bad year. Right. And he'll just return to what he was.
The bounce back.
Right. So it's, you can choose any of those that you want. And as you were mentioning, I think it sometimes takes two of those for guys. You know, some guys are missing two of those things that they need, right? They don't have the opportunity, mm-hmm. and they need the velocity or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They need another pitch and they've been hurt. So here's a good one. Jacob Latz that does this. Give him opportunity with the Rangers and just add like one extra tick or so. Mm-hmm. And that's a good change up down. It's a good fastball upstairs. It's a good enough breaking ball.
It reminds me a little bit of Bubic. And, you know, Bubic is at 91 and Latz is 94. So he's already.
Yes. I mean, Bubic is another one. There's opportunity. Is he going to go every day? Right. He's been hurt in the past or so. And he didn't really need to do too much with his arsenal. He just kind of need to replicate it going from reliever to starter. Right. But is he going to get the volume? Is he going to be able to hold the skills of it, right? Those are the different pockets of finding that sleeper. So find the ones that are missing that and the ones that are believable to actually have it.
And the opportunity is there because next year under contract, they've got Jacob deGrom, Nathan Eovaldi, and
Jack Leiter.
Jack Leiter. That's it. I guess you could say Cole Wynn.
Kumar Rocker.
And Kumar Rocker, but like,
yeah,
that's, I would put Latz ahead of Cole Wynn and yep. I might even put him ahead of Kumar Rocker actually.
Yeah, I agree with that. So we'll see.
It's next. Latz is one of my favorites, you know?
And
then there's stuff that's really easy. I hesitate to say this because I feel like this one might get overused through sleeper season and just seem like a duh later on, but like, I'm still buying all of the Rays pitchers next year.
All of them. Oh, yeah. Well, they'll be in Tropicana, right?
Yeah. Shane Boz has like a 2.5 ERA difference between home and away. talking to Pepe about it, just being like, yeah, like we don't even know how our pitchers are going to move.
Oh, my God. You know, like, and it's a pitching lab, as you said last week. I think it was in Tropicana. You throw in also Drew Rasmussen not being like, will he, won't he? Like it's a sitcom that lasts too long. You know, is he going to go five or six innings, right? And I would imagine, you're going to go
six. And if Shane comes back, he'll be so dirt cheap because no one will think he'll pitch any innings. So, like,
right.
I might buy any. Because even Seymour, as much as I don't really like him, like, he's going to be pitching at home at Tampa. It's okay. Like, it's decent command. He's a lefty. You know, like, it's okay.
Joe Boyle?
That's pushing me a little bit. But it's good stuff, dude. It's good stuff, you know, and somehow they find ways to keep the walks down. I'm not saying, what's weird is the location numbers don't suggest he's actually any different.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, okay, there is the splinker at least.
Yeah, and the arm slot change. But like, you know, when you look at the underlying numbers, you're like, this could just totally be a mirage because like he has 11% walk rate with the Rays and that would be like one of his best ever. And yet I don't quite fully believe it.
I'm still really sad that Mason Montgomery isn't going to be a starting pitcher. I really hope he does. I hope he does.
I just wanted to at least be a stud reliever. His season was very surprising to me.
Yoniel Curit. I remember him in the preseason and be like, well, he's too far away. Yeah. Curé?
Yeah.
It's Curé, not Curit. Whatever.
I remember a little pocket of real excitement about him.
So yeah, and Forrest Whitley, of course, this is finally of the year. Don't forget about Logan Henderson as well with the Brewers as another just kind of young arm. Andrew Painter will arrive at some point. Bubba Chandler.
Oh, yeah, you got all the
Pirates guys, you know.
I looked at Painter's underlying numbers in AAA, and they're being suppressed. His stuff and location numbers are being suppressed by the sinker, and it's not one of his most important pitches. Maybe the change or something.
Okay,
like he could come up right now and have absurd model numbers in his three best pitches, which are the fastball, slider, and curve. I think
that's pretty good.
So this is really, I think what's happening is he's working on things, which could go either way.
They're not calling him up for whatever reason. So
he's working on things, and they don't really necessarily need him. Maybe they don't want him to come up and come into a short inning role where he's only throwing the fastball, slider, and curve. Maybe they really want him to dial in that sinker and change or whatever it is. But
do you think that Andrew Painter is in that rotation on day one?
I'm looking at finances. You know, that's a one way to look at things too. That's kind of people don't expect. Well, but Aaron Nola,
interesting. Yeah, it's just three guys. Nola actually is a Zardner free agent. He's not, right.
Nola Walker.
Which Walker? You can't do that. It's Tywon Walker Buehler. So you know,
Tywon Walker is still under contract for next year. Christopher Sanchez
and Ranger Suarez.
Ranger Suarez is a free agent, and I don't think they'll sign him. But Jesus Rosado is there, so that's four. So the number five might be open. I could see them buying like an $8 to $10 million veteran to kind of sit in that place, like a Max Scherzer type.
I know that Tywon Walker has done well, but come on, please. They can't actually still be leaning in on Tywon Walker in the rotation next year, can they?
Do you know how many starts Tywon Walker's made this year?
This was you don't understand. This guy,
I'm surprised every time I look at the number. I'm like, no.
Well, bro, I mean, I know it because starts? Every single there was all these opportunities for Tywon Walker to be out of the rotation and then something would happen.
Yes, somebody would get hurt, something would happen.
Or Mick Abel gets traded, or now they're not ready with Andrew Painter. Or no, there's Aaron Nola with the ankle. Oh no, now it's Zach Wheeler. It's just, you know, Spencer Turnbull died for this.
Where is he?
Oh man, I feel for that guy a lot. I really do. But all right, I didn't even get to the Pirates, but I think you guys know those guys are very interesting, and I'm curious to see how they develop. Braxton Ashcraft. Mike Burrows.
I didn't mention Ashcraft because I feel like he's inflating his sleeper status right now. Like he's I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be far, but he's going to be an expensive sleeper. You're going to have to pay for him.
But you can even Braxton Burrows and Miljinski. They all have aspects.
Burrows is probably my favorite when you think about price. You know, he's going to be cheap. Nobody's going to really do it.
Right. But is anyone going to do any of those three?
Then I'm taking Braxton, dude.
Yeah. I mean, Braxton is the most interesting breaking ball. It's like 92, 93 of that slider. That's what really sells it for me.
Elite breaking ball. And then it's the new sinker was a real big difference this year.
Mm. So we'll see if he can do it over six innings.
He has next year or so. Huge health issues.
Yeah.
He's had many surgeries.
Oh, boy. He is the Ashcraft's... Arts and crafts. I don't know. I gotta end this podcast. I gotta end this podcast right now. Oh my gosh. You know, it is so good to see you. I wanna let everybody know that I personally am going to be having my top 200 rankings out as soon as I can after the season ends. I mean, my ideal is to do it that week. So I don't know when you're putting out your first, you know, way too early rankings.
Even if I don't put it out, I'll try to have something in maybe Google Doc form or something for first pitch.
I would love to do that. Just like a week and a half after the season ends. We'll take the first week off and then we'll come back. We'll do one. And then we'll do something fun next week. We'll talk about all the starts the rest of the way or something along those lines, whatever you guys would like. But that is going to do it for today. On the behalf of Vino Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.